That can only mean one thing. It's time to check in with our Big Apple reporter, Lenore Skenazy from freerangekids.com. Lots of topics for discussion today, but we start with this story of school kids that had to walk home from a field trip.
Our buses had to leave, so we had to walk all the way from McDonald's to our school.
Students like Angela Onan had their doubts, but the buses weren't coming back, so they walked.
And it was sunny and windy, and it was not fun. Never again. Although I would like to go to the symphony, just not walk from McDonald's to our school.
Lenore, this is bizarre stuff.
Yeah, the field trip was to, I think, some kind of orchestra. Mm-hmm. And then the kids stopped at McDonald's, and I think there were like 100 of them. So obviously it took quite a while at McDonald's, and it was taking so long that the school buses that had taken them to the trip had to peel off and go pick up actual kids who had to go home after school, which left the teachers scratching their heads going, oh, no, what can we do? We don't have the buses here anymore. And they decided to make the brave step, literally step, of having the kids walk half a mile all the way back to school. And this is in the South, where it was a beautiful, warm day, and the kids were shocked that there was not a bus taking them that half mile.
And do they not do any walking at all or any kind of exercise that half a mile is going to be such a big deal?
Well, there's a couple of things going on
here. Or was it health and safety? Let's be honest. Let's give them some credibility. Was it health and safety?
Was it health and safety? You know, we don't actually call it health and safety here. What it was odd, okay? It was so odd that the local television station did a story on this. And the reporter actually recreated the march. You know, he actually retraced the steps that these students had to take from the McDonald's back to home. And he said, in fact, it wasn't half a mile. It was more like four-fifths of a mile. Like, this is the smoking gun. Like, this is Watergate, you know, that he's uncovered some amazing scandal. And the truth of the matter is that, yeah, no, most kids in America don't walk. I think the statistic at this moment is that 11% of kids walk to school now. And so I think a walk of half a mile would have been amazing for them, but I don't think it would cripple them, right? And yet when the reporter was doing the story, which is amazing, it's a story, right? I mean, kids walking half a mile, high school kids walking half a mile is a television story. And when he interviewed one of the kids, she said that, basically that it was, you know, a long, hard walk and it was no fun. And I'm like, no fun compared to getting back to school immediately and going right to class and finishing up that extra hour of school day? This was no fun, walking with 100 of your friends on a bright, sunny day. So there's just something very weird that the kids don't realize they're having fun, that it's so unusual that the press has to jump in, and that it's considered, like a cover-up that the school said it was half a mile when, in fact, the kids were walking four-fifths of a mile. Ye gads. I mean, that's a strange moment in parenting and child culture, not to mention school culture.
And what's this about some kid had been attending a firefighting training course and had a penknife in his car?
These are the zero tolerance stories that sort of happen pretty regularly here in America. And in this case, it was a teenager, I think he was like about 16, and for some reason, the school was looking in his car. So it wasn't even that he had brought this quote-unquote dangerous weapon onto campus, but in his car, because he was taking lessons in how to be a firefighter and how to respond to emergencies, he had a penknife in there. And as he explained later on, the penknife was there because, say you are in an accident, say he's rushing to the scene of an accident and somebody is in their car and it's about to explode, or they're on fire, or they've broken every limb in their body, you want to have a knife there so that you can cut the safety belt off that person and drag them to safety. But because we have these incredibly set and stone laws that seem to not allow teachers or administrators to make any decisions of their own based on common sense, since he was found with a knife on school property, or he had a knife on school property, that was considered something that was illegal, that the school could not tolerate under its zero tolerance laws, and he was thrown in jail, I think 13 days, I believe he was sent to prison for 13 days. I'm just looking this up.
For having the knife, the penknife in his car.
For having the penknife in his car, which, first of all, you want him to have a penknife in his car. because you want a kid to be resourceful. Secondly, it's a pen knife. He did not have an Uzi in his car. He did not bring the Uzi into school. He did not threaten to... He didn't threaten anyone.
Well, he didn't bring the pen knife into school. He just had it in his car.
He didn't bring the pen knife into school. And even if he did bring a pen knife into school, I mean, a lot of times I do hear from parents whose kids were suspended for a pen knife. And the reason being that the school sees it as a weapon, whereas the kids often see it as something they forgot in their backpack, or they use in Boy Scouts, mm-hmm. or they like to have handy, because until this generation, a pen knife was seen for what it is, which is
a pen knife. Something useful.
It's almost like a Swiss Army knife. Like it is a Swiss Army knife, or it's seen like scissors, or a pen, literally, you know, or a flashlight. I mean, it's just a tool. But when we're so concerned, we see everything. This is all I talk about, is we see children through the lens of risk now. And if you look through the lens of risk and you're looking at a knife, the first thing you think of is stabbing as opposed to, fixing a broken locker or cutting your apple or helping somebody who's been in an accident get out of their seatbelt. So it's a really crazy way to look at life. I say it's through the lens of risk. And the other word I think I've used with you before is I'm trying to popularize this phrase called worst first thinking. We think of the worst possible case first and proceed to think that it's going to happen. So if you look at a knife and you think, oh my God, I don't want children being stabbed willy-nilly. I don't want 15 bodies on the floor at the end of the school day. Then you take away the knife and you send the kid to jail, or you suspend them and you never let them come back. But if you look at it as a knife, like has been part of the human toolbox since the Bronze Age, at least, then you would say, oh, that's great, he has a knife. He's thinking ahead.
Now, I'm told that there was a situation where parents didn't want their kids to do a stage show, Carrie, because it could influence them in a negative way.
Yeah, well, you know, Carrie gets bullied and she has her revenge and it involves buckets of blood. And whether or not you think that's a great idea for a school musical, I mean, when it appeared on Broadway, it was such a flop that there was actually a book written called That Since Carrie, and it's a book about all the horrible Broadway flops that have ever occurred. But the point is, it is a musical. These are high school students, and the drama teacher at that particular high school, who's been there, I think, for 25 years, doesn't seem to have created an entire generation of, debilitated children from the musicals he's put on, decided that this year it would be Carrie, and the parents were up in arms. They're sort of like Carrie herself, right? Because they thought that this was so inappropriate. And one of the things they really objected to was the fact that in some of the lyrics there was references to sex and drugs. And it's like, yes, because no child has ever been exposed by high school to a lyric that would allude to sex or drugs. Except in the context of a musical, a family musical. So they were really weird. But then one guy who wrote to my site said that you wouldn't believe what's going on in high schools here. This is just an aside. Mm-hmm. But his kid's school, maybe it was a junior high, was doing the musical Beauty and the Beast, which, as you'll recall, is a Disney musical, okay? And they had to change some of the lyrics there in the Disney musical because parents objected. One of them was, somebody asks the bear if he wants something to drink, and they go, a beer for the bear? And that had to be changed because they were referring to beer in front of children, apparently leads them all to become alcoholics and possibly to possess
pen knives. Well, hang on a second. No, I don't have kids myself, but I could kind of understand depending on the age. What's the big deal about, you know, just changing a beer to a light drink, a water or fizzy drink or something? What's the problem? They probably wouldn't allow fizzy drink either.
Really, and certainly not one that had any sugar in it, because then that would be a soda, and then pretty soon you'd be encouraging obesity. One lyric might seem completely minor and silly, and I agree that it is, but the assumption behind it is terrifying, and that is that our children are so fragile that if they simply hear one reference to something once that perhaps is either disturbing or politically incorrect or adult rather than completely, you know, age 7 to 7.5 appropriate, they will be harmed irreparably. And so therefore we must be vigilant about everything they see, hear, touch, eat, watch, get near. And that's the idea that children must be in the bubble that we talk about, this whole bubble wrapping idea. I mean, if one reference to a beer in a lyric of a song, part of a musical created by Disney, is too much for their fragile little selves to to encounter without them turning instantly into dissolute alcoholics, then we have a pretty dim view of kids and a new one. I mean, you know, kids have always been part of the world, but now we're so separating them and so cosseting them that it's as if we think that they can't do anything successfully. They will be complete wrecks if we're not sort of one of the terms I've heard now is curling parents. You know, in curling, there's that whatever that thing is going along the ice, and whoever the curlers are there with little whisk brooms in front of the curling thing, mm-hmm. whisking away the tiniest motes of ice. And that's what we're trying to do with that lyric. You know, taking out the word beer is pointless and ridiculous and frantic.
Now, I want to play a little piece of music, and this piece of music is going to take you back.
Okay.
Now, for those of us of a certain age, that music conjures up images of the Little House on the Prairie's Walnut Grove, a place where children wandered free and clean around the countryside, safe in the comfort of their community. But Walnut Grove in 21st century Missouri is a very different place, I am told, Lenore.
Well, what happened in Walnut Grove this particular week is that a mom was at home and she got a frantic call from the school saying that her child, who has special needs, was having some kind of terrible meltdown and that she should come immediately to the school, which she did. And she was so upset, and the call that had called her, you know, was so worrisome that she flew, you know, she was buzzed in, but she flew down the hall and went into the child's classroom and was there trying to, you know, comfort him or diffuse the situation. I'm not sure exactly what the situation was, but following her into the room a few minutes later was a very angry school administrator who said, "You didn't sign in." And the mother's like, "That's right. I'm here all the time. I was here yesterday. You know who I am. I got a call from the school. My kid is having a meltdown. He's special needs. Bring me the book. If you want me to sign in, I'll sign in now. Whatever you want me to do. Can you see that this is a terrible situation?" And the administrator said there was no need for her to sign now. The police had already been alerted. The police were on their way because the mom had not signed into the sign-in book at the school. Well, sure enough, the police showed up, and they hauled her off to the precinct house for the horrible crime of not signing the sign-in book at the school where everyone knew her, where the school had called her to please come in. So to me, that is yet another example of this whole zero-tolerance thing we were talking about with the penknife earlier. The idea is that, you know, there's a rule, but there is no common sense used when applying the rule. Yeah, you're supposed to sign in when you come into the school. Did this mom not do it? Yeah. Did she goof up? Yes. Maybe she did. She was in a hurry. The school had called her. The school had allowed her in, and the school knew her. I would take those into consideration, but the school did not. And so there she was, arrested for, you know, not signing a stupid school book. And the thing about those sign-in sheets, it drives me crazy even when they are adhered to, because I don't understand how they're supposed to keep anyone safe anyhow. I mean, if I was a school shooter, I don't think the fact that I had to sign in would stop me from shooting. It's like, oh, well, I guess I'll put this here. I got to get anybody have a pen here, and oh, I have to put my whole address, and here's my driver's license. Mm. I mean, you always have to give your driver's license, at least here in New York City, when you're signing in. And I thought, you know, if I was a terrorist, I would, you know, the first thing I would do, and I know this probably wouldn't be the hardest part of my job as a terrorist, is I would get a fake ID.
Which are very easy to get.
Yes, so simple. So simple. It's a rite of passage for like a 14-year-old. So the idea that the school sign-in book is somehow sacrosanct and saving our children, and that by merely not signing it, you have suddenly put the whole school into jeopardy, is ridiculous to begin with. But then to penalize this mom for rushing to defuse a terrible situation is obviously beyond that. Really what at base worries me about that kind of story that I hear all the time, and the penknife story, is that you and me can see that these make no sense, right? Derek, you agree that the penknife is something it's fine for a kid to have in his car, and the mom is okay to rush into the school and skip signing the book? Do you agree?
Well, you know, because I work for the National Broadcasting Service, I'm not sure how to answer that, to be perfectly honest with you. I think kids are mollycoddled. That's my gut feeling. We certainly were allowed to do stuff that you would never be allowed to do nowadays. I mean, we could certainly go knocking on doors and ask complete strangers in mm-hmm. places where we didn't live if they wanted any odd jobs done. I don't imagine you'd get away with that in the States, mm-hmm. would you? I couldn't go up knocking at some stranger, some random house. Some man would come out and say, "Can I cut your grass and will you give me some money for it?"
Well, you could, but I'm not sure that a lot of kids still do. There was actually a sort of hopeful story the other day, which is that in one state, and I can't remember what, somebody had proposed a law that would make it illegal to pay any child under 14 to do a task without his parents' explicit approval first. Mm. And when it came to court, the judge said, wait, I just did this the other day. I hired a kid who was going around, and I hired him to rake my lawn. Should that be illegal? And the lawyer said, well, Judge, we knew you were doing it in good faith, but what about if somebody was, you know, paying a kid for some, you know, sexual favor or whatever? And the judge said, well, even if you know I'm doing it in good faith, this law would make it illegal for me, too. I mean, you're trying to prevent child abuse, but you're preventing children from getting any jobs whatsoever because this is such an overarching law. And in the end, the judge tossed it out. So that was actually really great because the judge could see that it's sort of like the zero tolerance thing. It's like, should we have no knives ever in school? What if you're a Boy Scout? What if you're training to be an emergency medical technician? So there's a little bit of hope, I'd say, in recognizing that the mollycoddling, the zero tolerance, the fear for every word and every instance harming our child or children, like taking the word beer out of a lyric, maybe we have gone overboard. And maybe we're not only penalizing children, we're penalizing parents. The piece that's on my blog just now that I just posted is about a proposed law in one state here, Rhode Island, that would not let a child get on or off the school bus up through seventh grade, which is up till age 12, without a pre-approved adult putting them on the bus and then waiting there for them after the school day at the school bus to take them home.
Now, who would the pre-approved adult be, and who would adult be, and who would actually pre-approve them? Could they be pre-approved? I mean, if you said to me, would you collect little Johnny from school at 4:30 today when you finish your program? And I'd say yes or no. Would I have to be vetted by the Gardaí before I collect little Johnny or little Janie or
you
whoever?
No, you could be pre-approved if I had written a note to the school and said, today, believe it or not, Derek Mooney is going to be waiting at the bus stop for little Johnny who possibly is bigger than Derek Mooney because he's 12 years old. But I would have to send a note to school, and I would have to be listing the people who were approved, like his father, his uncle, me, and I couldn't even say his older sister, who's 15, is waiting for him, because you have to be at least 16 years old, according to this proposed law, to be legally the one who must wait for the child to get off the bus. So I don't think the law is going to pass, because I just put it on my blog and put all the email addresses of all the people. There's like 5 people sponsoring this bill. And I think it's going to get a lot of attention immediately here, which is the great thing about the internet. But the fact that working parents are going to be up in arms, because if you trust your 10-year-old to walk the 2 blocks or even the 2 houses from the bus stop to your home, you're not going to want to have to suddenly hire a babysitter or come home in the middle of the day and wait from 3:30 to 4 to take your kid home and then rush back to work. I mean, it makes no sense.
But I just wonder how many children get abused or kidnapped in America on a daily basis. I mean, is this such a staggering figure that there's paranoia everywhere?
No. It is. The paranoia is staggering, and the figures are pretty stable throughout human history. And the one that's the most stable is the fact that the idea of strangers waiting at the bus stop or following kids home is not where the danger is. 90%, you know, there's different studies, but somewhere around 90 to 95% of all abuse of children is by that pre-approved stranger, is by somebody that the child knows well, a relative or a family friend. So all this overprotection while kids are outside of the house is ridiculous, and actually I think makes kids less safe, because it teaches them that they're, you know, they have no, that they're under constant threat. They never get to walk. They never get the exercise. They think that half-mile walk home from the field trip is, you know, a weird experience that nobody should undergo. And they don't learn street smarts. They don't learn to trust their gut. They're kept in this bubble. And so I'd say, considering that here in America, the crime rate, the literal crime rate for adults, for kids, for burglaries, for murder, for rape, is back to what it was before the advent of color television. We're back to the crime rate of the 60s before it went up through the 70s, 80s, and peaked in the 90s. So given the fact that the crime rate is not higher today, it's actually lower today than when most of today's parents were children and were playing outside and were walking home from the bus stop without a phalanx of armed guards, I'd say there's no reason for us to be implementing all these safeguards and oversights that aren't keeping kids any safer because they're already safe.
Lenore, thank you very much indeed.
Oh, thank you, Derek. Thanks for letting me rattle on.
That's Lenore Skenazy from FreeRangeKids.com.